This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to Seagull Social Season 3, Episode 40, and what a podcast we have in store for you today. Unfortunately, maybe not so much for Charlie, but Charlie, first of all, thank you so much for coming on. I know as a Man United fan, it must be pretty difficult to get beaten by teams like Brighton, so we really appreciate you you coming on and taking some time out. How are you? You all good?
Yeah, good, thank you. No, in all honesty, you know what? I feel like football's changed so much. It's not like a... I feel like what five years ago it would have been like, you know, when you lose to teams like Brighton, that's no longer like a thing anymore. Brighton are not just Brighton as well, you know, Brentford, Fulham, you know, these teams, they might drop off next year, but watching Brighton last night, genuinely, that is the best footballing performance that I've seen. Admittedly, I don't watch much football other than Manchester United, but that's the best footballing team that I've seen this season. Like, I tweeted about it a few times, like ridiculous. And when Pep said about the Brighton being the best first phase build-up team, and you're playing with, no disrespect, in all honesty, what should be probably above average players, and they're able to do what they're being able to do, right? It's you know, all credit to you.
Nah, mate. Well, I was about to say what an intro until that last line, but no. I agree with a lot that you said there. The praise that we're getting around the Premier League, I don't think we would have got that, let's say, even 2-3 years ago. So to get the kind of praise from Klopp, Pep Guardiola, yeah, the elite managers saying about how well we're playing, yeah, I think it's a testament to how far we've come. And Ryan, you of course were at the game. How are you feeling? Did you celebrate? Did you go out last night?
My throat's a little bit sore, but yeah, I'm feeling good, mate. I'm feeling. To be fair, I actually didn't realise it was as bad as it was until I tried talking, but it's all right now. But mate, I've not celebrated that much at the Amex in I don't even know. Like I know that we've got I know that we have Charlie on here, and I don't want to just like completely rub it in his face. But the way that game went, obviously after the semi final, the way that, you know, I'm not taking anything away from Mitoma and. There's a couple that went down for us, but Rashford, I think I lost my head at least five times before that goal at the amount of times he fell on the floor. And the way it sort of just comes back as perfect poetry, we lose on penalties at the FA Cup semi-final and we win today with a penalty. Well, yesterday with a penalty in the 99th minute. Composure from Alexis was unbelievable, but my gosh.
I think it even goes before that, right? You think about the COVID season when we got the penalty and the game stopped. The whole game had finished, and then we go back and score that penalty. Football, what goes around comes around. So
we don't need to talk about that, Charlie. Do you know what I mean? We don't need to talk about that. That's in the past, all right. we're focusing on the now, mate. All right. No, that was a very hurtful moment. I remember that. The full time whistle went, and you got a penalty somehow, which is very classic Premier League / Man United relationship, really. But yeah, that's another conversation. But Charlie, just before we get into the game, of course, we've got loads to digest and lots to go through. If you don't mind, obviously, you've done a lot in your career up to this date, I'm sure you're going to be doing a lot more going forward as well. But what are you currently doing? Are you working with the United Stand, am I right in saying, at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm a content creator for the United Stand, so that's anything from, obviously, like, presenting, hosting shows. So, like, we have a fan forum after every game, so I was hosting that last night. Hence why I probably got a few bags under my eyes. It was a late one. But yeah, just kind of
join the club,
talking and digesting, obviously, what happened, giving our opinions as fans, obviously, to then producing, editing, or social media production, or everything kind of comes under that content creation thing. And yeah, and I'm enjoying it. In all honesty, it's weird. Since joining, I've never watched as little football in terms of like other teams. Yeah, like because my job is so football centric, and obviously like I'm watching Manchester United, watching the highlights, watching the games back. It's like I almost don't have time to then watch a Champions League game. Like I've taken my time to try and watch kind of other games, like the City Arsenal game, to try and watch that. But in all honesty, like I'm not too bothered about anyone else. But
yeah
Brighton were very, very good last night.
Yeah. Am I right in saying you work with Mark Goldbridge? Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, what's that like, just from a sort of insider's point of view? Because, of course, we see Mark Goldbridge as a content creator, as sometimes as a meme. We see him all over the internet. What's he really like? Is he like the same as he is, you know, what we see that you see?
Yeah, he's a nice guy, right? I think one thing with content creators or YouTubers that kind of goes across the board is when you're on camera, you're always a little bit more eccentric, right? Because you've got people to entertain, you've got people to please. You know, that might be someone might be having a rubbish day, and then you're almost their escape. So you've got to be a little bit more eccentric. But he's very much the same, just a little bit quieter, I guess. Not as eccentric. He's still very much, you know, someone that. He could just say the most ridiculous things, but it's just like very normal fit to come out of his chair. Nice guy. Yeah, he's he just loves Manchester United, and yeah, he's a good guy.
It's top stuff. And then finally, your hashtag days as well. Are you still playing for hashtag United, or is that now over?
No, I had to stop playing for. So I stopped. I think it was around COVID time. I moved to Essex to help basically playing for them, and I did work for them for a bit. And then COVID happened literally as I think I went home for like Mother's Day, and the lockdown happened. And then basically I just had to move back home because we were locked down for what, 8 months or whatever it was. And then by that time, I think I probably got injured for the 16th time that season. And it was just like, you know, football moves too fast, and it was just too far for them to travel up and down every week. So, yeah, no, they're doing good things. Promotion again, didn't they? They won the league. So, yeah, it's really
tastes
cool.
Like promotion.
Yeah,
no, amazing, good stuff. Well, no, look, Charlie, again, it's great for you to come on. And without further ado, we'll get cracking into the game. So, Ryan, do you want to kick us off? Obviously, I've got lots of talking points to go through, but just quickly, give us a quick minute or 30 second synopsis of the game, and then we'll get into it.
A lot of cheating.
To be fair, do you know what? I'm going to jump in here. To be fair, a few of our players as well, like in Ciso, I know, and again, we'll get onto this as well.
A fair bit, to be fair.
Yeah, and Ciso, Matoma as well. But of course, yeah, Man United play as well, like Rashford, was going Fernandez. Down. Fernandez, yeah.
Anthony Mo.
So I think it was a bit of both, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Casemiro. But what we'll say is, footballing wise, I think first half, to be fair to them, that I thought the first sort of 10, 15, 20 minutes, they had a few chances. It wasn't so plain sailing then. I think we sort of got into our stride. I thought Billy Gilmore was fantastic first half. I thought he's probably one of the best players on the pitch alongside Adam Webster. Caicedo was doing a decent job on the right, but I guess when Gilmore came off, it did make sense at the time to try and put a little bit more in midfield. But I thought he played a fantastic game. I'm so happy for him because, you know, it wasn't too long ago everyone was calling him the almost forgotten man, wasn't he, really? And now he's, you know, nailing himself on as a bit of a starter for us and alongside Alexis and Caicedo. But no, I thought first half, got into it probably last sort of 20 minutes. Second half, I thought we just completely dominated, really. I didn't really see too much from United that I remember anyway. That could be the tainted vision of the Alexis penalty so late, but I don't remember much. I just remember sort of really dominating the game. I think we were pretty strong throughout. And I was just happy with the way we played again, because we seem to have this weird thing when we play against these big teams. We do it every week anyway, but we just raise our game that little bit more. And I think it showed again last night. But I was a bit worried that we're going to be coming away from it with one of those classic, you know, we deserve more, and we're going to be frustrated, because I think, you know, to come away from a draw against United nowadays is frustrating, rather than, you know, you want to win the game. It's mad.
Well, Charlie, just quickly, of course you can give your Man United perspective, because it's always great to hear that, because we are a bit blinded, you know, by our team sometimes. But just quickly, before the game, obviously we had four changes from Wolves, and we had Caicedo at right back. Did that surprise you? Were you quite happy with that? And do you think that was going to be sort of advantage Man United going into the game?
No, look, I mean, Caicedo is ridiculous. He's so good. And I think the one time I can remember Rashford getting the better of Caicedo was, yeah, it was kind of in and around the box, and you could see Caicedo just didn't want to let him on his right foot, so it opened up, yeah, him going, yeah, on his left foot. And I think,
yeah,
either missed or still made the save. That was literally the only time. And look, let's be honest, Rashford, as of late, isn't in the greatest of form, but overall, he's having the best season goal-scoring-wise and performance-wise of his career, right? So he's quite high on confidence. So to be able to say, as a someone who doesn't traditionally play right-back, I don't know if he has done a job in the past, but to my knowledge,
he hasn't for us,
that's,
but yeah,
that's the first time, right, he's played at full-back. So, yeah, to be able to... And it's like even when you guys were on the ball, he did push in like that inverted fullback, didn't he? And yeah, went into like that midfield area. I just think, you know, you've credit to Brighton, the scouting and the network that you guys have built up. Like, you know, there's a few players, you know, you get rid of Cucurella, right, for 60 million or whatever it was, and you bring this other left back, Estupinan or whatever, and he's better, yeah, for like 18 million, even better than him. And I know Cucurella's having an awful season in the Chelsea shirt, but like, it's
funny,
you know, it is what teams aspire to do, right? You bring in, you're turning over a profit, and then hopefully, look, I mean, a load of people will probably say, like, you know, why don't you support your local? Because my local is Brighton, right? But I never grew up watching Brighton. My idol was David Beckham on the TV. It was always Man United. So that was like a natural thing for me to support Manchester United. And I mean, Brighton are ridiculously good. I think they deserve all the praise in the world. And in all honesty, I do hope that they do get some form of European football, whether it, you know, whether that does end up being the Champions League, whether it ends up being Europa League or Conference League, whatever it is. I feel like that's the next step for Brighton. And what you were saying there, Ryan, in terms of the game, like, I can't really disagree with it. Me as a Man United fan, I can't even sit here and go, because Antony had that chance like 3 minutes, yeah, in or whatever, and he missed.
Yeah.
I can't even sit here and say, if we score that, that's a different game, like a load of other people would. Because, yes, obviously it would be a different game with 1-0 up inside the first like 5 minutes. But Manchester United have this thing of cruising through a first 20 minutes, half hour, first half. And the second half is abysmal. We've seen it against Spurs, right? 2-0 up. They didn't have a foot in the game. And then we go and draw the game 2-2. It's almost become a predictable thing now. So, yeah, even if we scored that goal, like, I'm pretty sure you guys would have still gone on to dominate the game. And Manchester United, we're just not in the right headspace and the right... We just don't have the right squad to play how you guys do.
You're right. Right.
And that
You're
sounds right. so silly. It sounds so stupid. But I think a lot of it does come down to, you know, a lot of people will blame, I know Harry Maguire wasn't on the pitch, but, you know, the backup options we have, you know, we've got our two best centre halves are injured. But look, in all honesty, Lindelof and Shaw were near enough perfect yesterday.
Yeah.
Shaw, you know, freak handball. It's obviously handball. It's a penalty. You can't argue against it. But, you know, these things happen. David De Gea, you know, can't play out the back like Steele can. I thought Steele was ridiculous with his feet. You deserve to win ultimately. And it would have been, if we managed to get the draw, it would have been a good point. That was kind of, you know, it got to that stage. It's the squeaky bum time and you're thinking, just get out of here with a point. But, what goes around comes around. And it definitely came around.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the end of the podcast. So thanks for listening, yeah, everyone.
It's funny how you mentioned that. I was going to just follow on to one of his points, because it's funny how you mentioned sort of you know, United don't have the players that we do. And you're right. It sounds weird when you say that. But I think the difference is here to what's happened at United, to what's happened at a lot of big clubs. You know, Liverpool have sort of fallen off. I think they will come back eventually. But Brighton have done this over 4 years, I think, since 2019, really. We really started to, you know, change the model, the business model changed. You got a director of football in, you know, the recruitment changed. We stopped from spending 17, 18, 20 million on, you know, sort of rubbish from abroad. And we went for the sort of wonderkid model of going on Football Manager and finding good players. But the difference is now is we've got this for the last 4 years. And these players that signed then when they were probably around 17, 18 have been within the club for this long, and now that they're coming to sort of 20, 21. It sounds young, and it is young because it's still younger than I am, but it's funny because they've had that 4 years at the club of learning what we do. And, you know, regardless of who we get in next, it's because of the sort of plan that's so well thought out from the top that, you know, it doesn't matter who's going to come in because it's going to suit them. And I think that it's not about the personnel. I mean, don't get me wrong, De Zerbi's a fantastic, he is a great manager, and there's no doubt. But you saw it with Potter. We said he was irreplaceable only in September. And, you know, now we're saying we've got a manager better than him. I think, you know, as much as it is testament to De Zerbi for what he's changed the mentality, he's changed the way we play. But also it comes down to Tony Bloom and what they've started from the top, because no matter who comes in, they're going into a role that's going to make them the best they physically can be, because that it's so broad and it's so in depth. You know, it's actually mind blowing when you think about it like that.
The system, the system that you guys have implemented, like, it is almost, you could put any name into that system and like they'll work, rather than what Man United currently have. We don't, we kind of have a system, but it's just not like a well-oiled machine that anyone can go into and then they know their role. It's very much, if we have our best 11, the system works. As soon as you put someone who's not meant to be there, it's almost the system has to change in order to, you know, complement whoever that may be. And as much as Lindelof, obviously Shaw has been phenomenal for us at centre back, but as much as Lindelof has been also been great, he's not Varane and he's not Martinez, right? He's not a ball kind of carrying or ball progressing centre half. So we do lose a lot of the progression into midfield, and you see a lot more long balls. And ever since David De Gea had that howler at Sevilla, you see a lot more long balls from him as well, and less playing out from the back. And I can guarantee you, you know, whether it takes 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, if Ten Hag is still at the club, that is not how he wants to play. It's never how he played at Ajax. He's going to want to play out from the back. He's going to want to, you know, just like De Zerbi said, I can't remember the quote off the top of my head, but he said something along the lines of, because he got asked of why he doesn't want to kick it long, why he doesn't want his goalkeepers to kick it long. Because he's 50 of winning it, right? You'd rather, you like the odds of
better. It's a gamble,
You take risks. And that's the thing that you guys did last night. You took risks and they paid off. The trust that your back five, including your goalkeeper, put in each other when they're under pressure to just little triangles, you know. It's so enjoyable as someone who plays football to see, you know, footballers be able to do that, because you see them do it in rondos in training and stuff, and then when they can do it on the pitch, pressured by like three players, like it's so good to watch.
No, I know. I was just going to add, actually, because you both alluded to it as well, about the system and how Brighton can easily replace players. So funny enough, like the most chat I've been getting from rival fans is about like, oh, when the Brighton players leave, McAllister leaves, Caicedo leaves, you're going to be done for. But it's funny because that's what everyone said when Ben White left, when Basuma left, when Cucurella left. So we clearly have a model and we clearly have a replacement sort of ready to go when these players go. And I feel like that and also the argument, and I'm sure you guys have seen it, of how De Zerbi is just carrying on Potter's model, and he's basically just carrying on the great work that Potter's done. But it's a completely different way of playing, and a completely different, you know, the setup is completely different. The way we play out the back is different. The, you know, the system's different. Everything about it is completely different. Of course, we can't disregard what Potter did, and he was fantastic for us. But I think the argument is very tired and it's very flawed to say that De Zerbi is simply just taking what Potter did and slightly improving it. I think that's very disrespectful. And would you agree with that, Ryan?
Yeah, I think he's, you know, De Zerbi's been fantastic. The way he's changed the mentality of this team. I think I said it a while ago that the fans haven't kept up with the mentality shift in the squad, and also the, you know, the way that De Zerbi is. he's a winner. He wants to win things. He doesn't want to just take the positives and focus on, you know, if we lose a game, it's better than winning a game. He wants to win every game. And I think that that's a different mentality. And that's probably, you know, why he'll go on to be better than Potter. I think if he was to go to a bigger team, he's got a bit more of a mold to be able to fit that. But yeah, he's coming to Bloom's setup and into Barber's setup that suits him. You know, he's got a very free sort of role here. He's got, you know, players that are so versatile. And I think, you know, Charlie touched on it, how we sort of invert all of our wing backs. And even, as you know, so Caicedo, who doesn't even play as a wing back, can still invert and come back in midfield and then drop wide. And I think that the difference is now is we've got, and De Zerbi said it, you know, in the pressers, that it doesn't matter about positions. All these players are good enough to play anywhere, and that's what he wants to do. He doesn't care about positions. He's not fixated on, you know, whether a player can play here or can play there. He wants all of the players to be able to play everywhere. Yesterday you saw that. I think you see that pretty much every week if you were to watch us. But the diamonds that we're playing, especially with Jason Steele, my God, how he's changed. You know, this was Jason Steele that we didn't even trust putting in the second team when we were playing against Newport in the cup. You know, this is a Jason Steele now that you'd arguably rather have over Robert Sanchez, who was picked first for the first team of Spain. It's mad, but it goes to show again the difference in levels and the attention to detail, I think, is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Well, I remember seeing, obviously, when Potter was leaving, about, you know, it being almost like turmoil, like what do Brighton do next? And ever since, I actually saw a graph when De Zerbi took over, and where, like, your XG, and then I think it was like XG conceded, and literally the XG conceded has just got lower and lower, and then obviously your XG has just got higher and higher and higher, because I remember it being a theme, especially when Malpay was there, of just, you know, Brighton just need a goal scorer, like, you know, they need a goal scorer, need a goal scorer. But what you've been able to achieve now off the back of De Zerbi is, like, you know, much more than a goal scorer. Maybe you guys still think that you might need a goal scorer as well, but just the system that you have in place, if you do manage to find a goal scorer, then, I mean, this season, as much as it's been a bit of a weird one, Liverpool-Chelsea obviously not having the greatest of seasons, you'd be with it, you know, top four shout 100%.
Yeah. Oh, I think if we didn't get robbed at Spurs as well, I think that would have helped towards our push. But things have happened. But just going on to sort of battles as well, because we've mentioned a few players, you know, Webster, Steele, you know, Rashford as well, you know, with some individual performances. But I want to talk about Wan-Bissaka and Mitoma, because obviously they had a bit of a battle. And of course, there was a lot of debate online about who came out on top, really. And I remember the chance in the first half when Mitoma should have squared it, really, but then ended up having the shot and basically knocked out De Gea, got a nice sort of ball to the face. And then, there was a sort of really good battle, I thought, between the two. Let's start with you, Charlie. Who do you think came out on top? And was it, you know, was it one of those battles where it's always going to be difficult for the fullback, especially Brighton at home? Mitoma, you know, had a fantastic season, but he's obviously played him recently in the FA Cup semis as well. So he sort of knew maybe how to play against him. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think Wan-Bissaka, I think the battle in the FA Cup semi-final was better than last night's. From Wan-Bissaka's point of view, I think it was quite clear that he kind of won that one. The one yesterday was a bit odd, because and Wan-Bissaka's weird with, like, defensively, as good as he is defensively, he's probably one of the best one-on-one defensive kind of players of last ditch tackling, all that palaver. But the amount that he was showing Mitoma on his left, right? Like, he was literally begging him, like, go on, like, I dare you, go down this left side. Because I don't know if it's like something that, I'm guessing it's something they've looked at, right? That Mitoma, he studied the art of dribbling, right? He knows what to do, and cutting back on his right, his favoured right foot, and bending it. And I do think that if Mitoma, there was a couple of times, wasn't he, where he was one-on-one with Wan-Bissaka and tried to poke shots. If there was a little bit, I don't know whether that comes down to just decision-making, game management, of just finding a pass or trusting that left foot a little bit more than, you know, it could have been possibly 2 or 3-0. But no, I think it's a regardless of, I mean, look, maybe Aaron Wan-Bissaka, from his point of view, ultimately, he stopped Mitoma from scoring. So maybe he looks at, you know, he's beaten him. Mitoma maybe looks at it like, well, you know, I managed to actually get a few successful or half chances against you. So maybe I look at it as if I've beaten you. But I mean, it's a great one-on-one matchup. And look, Wan-Bissaka will always, I think, will always be chosen against those type of players. You go back to the Carabao Cup final when Dalot was actually playing against Saint-Maximin and he was turning him inside out. Wan-Bissaka comes on. Saint-Maximin's almost like non-existent. Aaron Wan-Bissaka looks like he's Bambi on ice, right? When he's got the ball, he looks so awkward. He doesn't know what he's going to do, but that almost makes him better because I don't think, if he doesn't know what he's going to do,
defenders won't know. Yeah.
Right? And he's, you know, all credit to him. Before the World Cup, I think he had a few injury worries and stuff, but he didn't get a look in. All fans were happy to get rid of him in January, and he's turned it completely around and arguably flipped the fan base on their head. And a lot of people would rather have Aaron Wan-Bissaka than Dalot now. Dalot's moved obviously over to the left-hand side as of late. So now people are like, oh, well, if he can do two jobs like Cancelo-ish, you know, it's probably worth keeping both of them. Mm. But no, I mean, all credit to Wan-Bissaka. I think he's revived his Manchester United career. And whether he, you know, I'd be happy to keep both of them. But I think if one's going to leave, then yeah, I think we're looking at Wan-Bissaka because Dalot's looking at getting a new deal.
Yeah. And Ryan, what do you think of the battle? Who do you think came out on top?
I think Charlie's right. There wasn't really much of a battle. I think the first half, you know, Mitoma had a few goes at him. He did get past him a few times as well. But yeah, that sort of final ball wasn't there. I think that the second half, we stopped really going through him. I think, to be honest with you, it was credit to probably De Zerbi for changing that rather than just going through Mitoma and almost putting the pressure on him to create chances. Because second half, we didn't really tend to do that too much. We sort of went through the middle a lot more. We used Caicedo a lot yesterday, and Gilmore was pretty impressive, as I said. So I don't know. I wouldn't say that there was really a clear winner. I guess if you were to edge it, you would give it Mitoma just because we won the game and he got through a few times. But I wouldn't really say it was one of Matoma's best games anyway. But yeah, don't get me wrong. At Wembley, yeah, you'd say that it was Wan-Bissaka. But I don't think there was a clear-cut winner. I guess maybe a bit of Brighton bias. I give it to Mitoma because we won the game. But as I said, it wasn't like a battle, was it? It wasn't let's watch Wan-Bissaka and Mitoma. It was almost a bit of a media hype for the sake of it. I think, to be honest with you, the battles were in midfield. And I think when you watched particularly Gilmore yesterday, when you watched particularly Casemiro, Anthony against Dunk was quite a hilarious one where he sort of bounced off his shoulder about 30 yards. But yeah, those battles were good. Mitoma against Wan-Bissaka, probably less so.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. I think Mitoma was brilliant at getting at Wan-Bissaka and potentially, you know, getting past him a few times, but his end product, yeah, was poor to his standards. I think there was that one scuff shot where he tried to sort of like scoop it, and De Gea just obviously very easy for him. And then of course where he should have squared it and should have scored potentially. So
he started well.
Yeah, he started well and then sort of just forward off. But let's talk about, there was a lot of, it was a very feisty game, to be honest with you. I think maybe because of what happened in the semi-final, I think the Brighton players were certainly up for it. And I think in response, the Man United players then sort of, you know, went back for it. So let's start with you, Charlie. What did you think? There was a few incidents. So there was, of course, people were saying Casemiro potentially second yellow, and also Anthony obviously kicked out of Dunk, and we had that altercation which Ryan has talked about. What do you think of those two decisions? Do you think it should have been Casemiro second yellow, and do you think Anthony should have been sent off for that kick out?
Yeah, I think I think Casemiro was treading on thin ice. In all honesty, I think. I don't know if there's some form. Look, we know, and this isn't Man United bias, I think this is across the Premier League and across football, refereeing and VAR is abysmal at this current moment in time. Like, it is awful. But Andre Mariner and Manchester United have had a pretty, I would say, up and down relationship over this season. It's just been pretty much down, right? And as soon as you find out that he's refereeing, it's just like, oh, here we go again. But no, in all honesty, I think Casemiro probably, on another day, he gets sent off. And I'm very surprised that, because, you know, players almost build up reputations throughout the season. He's already got two red cards.
Suspensions, yeah.
So I'm not surprised that he wasn't given another one as well. And I don't think you could really have argued against that one being, you know, and a lot of people, you know, with Casemiro being sent off, one of them for, I can't remember who the player was, grabbing someone like round the collar, wasn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah.
Other players this season have done it. So it's like, you know, which one, you know, if it's going to be one.
Fulham?
Yeah, I can't.
Was it a Fulham game?
Yeah,
I think it was a Fulham game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it might have been, or Leeds. I'm not too sure. But, you know, it's one rule for one team or just one person, then you can't implement that same rule. Same, I think, when Casemiro again got sent off, it might have been on, like, his second game back in the Premier League for going over the top of the ball. And I think the day before, someone did a worse challenge on João Félix for Chelsea, and it wasn't, I don't even think it was a yellow card. And it is just those little things that, whether it's Man United or not, if you're going to do it, you've got to be consistent across the board. That Anthony one as well that you touched on, you could see that coming a mile off. The little incident that there was before it where he tried to go in between, I don't actually know if he did get touched, but went down, didn't he? And it almost was like when Ronaldo first came to United, and yeah. It was like when something didn't go his way, it's like he's going to kick someone. Yeah, yeah, he's going to kick someone. He's wound up, frustration. He's going to kick someone. And it is, it's not what you want to see, but in some degree, I almost don't mind it because we, as Manchester United, we haven't had that. You know, you want to win so bad that you almost let it get you a little bit. And I don't agree with obviously kicking out and stuff like that, but the South American contingent that we've seen implemented in Anthony, Casemiro and Martinez, that winning mentality, we haven't had that. So some degree, I don't mind, you know, wanting to win so bad and getting frustrated and stuff. But obviously you shouldn't just start booting people for the sake of it. That's not, that's
not what you should do. Well, if you go down to 10 men, you're going to struggle to win games, I think.
Exactly. I think, again, on another day, you get sent off for that, which shouldn't be the case. It should just be where it's either a red card or it's not, right? It shouldn't be one rule one day and then tomorrow someone does it and gets sent off. You never quite know what's going to happen. But, we were kind of walking on a tightrope with those decisions. And in all honesty, I was surprised that Casemiro stayed on for the amount of time he did after getting that yellow because... What was weird was he wasn't, when you see someone get a yellow card, like a Granit Xhaka, who's notorious for getting yellow cards, you usually see him then pull out of tackles or shy away from certain 50-50s. If anything, he just wanted to go into more tackles. And it was like every time the ball went near him, it's like, oh, you're like cringing. You're like, oh, don't get sent off. Like, don't kick someone. Don't foul someone. And when he obviously did give that foul away, I think it was on McAllister maybe. And it's like, God, you're just sat there waiting for VAR to be like, yeah, it's going to be a red card. But no, I mean, luckily for us, that's one positive you can take away. So Casemiro is not suspended again because that wouldn't
be. You'd be struggling otherwise. And Ryan, let's talk about the penalty as well, of course, because so sure after the game, I'm sure you guys saw the post match interview. He actually came out and said that he didn't think it was a foul in the build up. So he said he obviously put his hands up, so to speak, and admitted that he was a handball.
He didn't handle it well,
but he did admit to, well, he was actually very convinced that it wasn't a foul in the build-up on Enciso. He thought he went down quite easily. Let's first of all start with you, Ryan, from a Brighton perspective. Do you think Enciso went down and do you think it should have been a foul? Not a foul, the other way?
I think it was soft, yeah. To be fair, from where I was up in the West Upper, it looked like a foul because obviously you see his arm go around and you see someone fall on the floor. You're going to say it's a foul. I think the way that it was, as we were just talking about the Anthony moment, we're talking probably 10 minutes before, 5 minutes before. I had lost my head to the extreme by that point, and I was absolutely shouting probably more than I'd be taking pride for. And yeah, I did go a bit mad. And I think, yeah, by the time we got to that point, I just, everything was a foul, wasn't it? As, you know, someone touches you, you're going to be screaming. So I think when Enciso went down, maybe I haven't actually watched it back, ironically, so I can't judge. But from where I was at the time, I screamed foul. if it was or not, I can't tell you. But I think that, yeah, the arm was high. I did see that bit. And it definitely was handball. You can't deny that one. But yeah. Maybe. But then again, on the balance of the game, the way it was going, my God, give us something, you know. So I think that, you know, we deserved something out of that. If we come out of that game with nothing again, you know, we would have been gutted. So it was nice to have something go our way.
Agreed. And quickly, Charlie, I just want to get your thoughts on, or your take on Bruno Fernandes. Because, look, as Man United fans, we can appreciate he's a very good player, right? He's a top quality player, and he's very integral to what Man United want to do well. But he's very petulant, to say the least. He loves a moan, and he's got I think he's got that now. Especially from referees, I think. Now he's got that reputation of being that moaner, being the person that gets into ref's face, and, you know, very, very vocal when it comes to decisions. Is it frustrating for you as a Man United fan, you know, seeing this from Bruno Fernandes, or again, like you were mentioning earlier, you actually quite like to see, maybe it's the passion or the fight from Bruno Fernandes? What's your take on his sort of personality in football?
Bruno, I think it's quite clear overall that Manchester United are a better team when he is involved. I think we create a lot more chances, and, you know, he's a brilliant footballer. More often times than he's not. I think there was I can't remember who it was against, but there was a game, wasn't there, where it was noted and made a huge thing. And this is what I don't understand. It's like, he's always done it, right? Like, since he's come, he's always very, very emotional, very hands kind of, you know, gesturing and moaning and stuff. And I feel like it has just been made like a huge, huge thing all of a sudden, like now. Me personally, I kind of think if I was playing with someone like that, I mean, it would be a little annoying, but then you've almost got to contextualize it to the point of, like, he's not moaning and playing like rubbish every week and not offering anything. Like, he is doing it for the better of the team. And this is what I didn't understand about the comments of Gary Neville that time, where he just put this false narrative out of Bruno asking to come off the pitch. He's asking to be subbed when he clearly wasn't. He was asking, like, because I think Erik ten Hag made some subs, and he was gesturing like, where's everyone playing? Like, where am I playing? And it's like, you know, to come from, Gary Neville does this thing on commentary whenever, especially when he's commentating on United games, of going complete opposite of bias, and is really harsh on United. It's almost like his way of counteracting him being able to commentate on us. And it just didn't make sense at all. Like, he put this narrative, and then obviously the media gets hold of it, and then it's a huge big thing. I in all honesty, sometimes it can be a little frustrating. Again, it comes down to what context we're in the game, what type of game's being played. If we're winning, we're losing, you know, sometimes it can be a little bit annoying, but that's part and parcel of Bruno Fernandes. I think he's a brilliant player. The numbers that he's put up for Manchester United since joining is ridiculous. So if you want a player like that, you know, you take him again.
So he comes with his baggage, right? I suppose his baggage is his personality, I suppose. And so you're, as a Man United fan, I suppose you've got to sort of put up with it. But Ryan, I'm just I'm just looking at the time here, so I just want to just get a few more points up. So let's talk about the penalty. What a penalty it was by McAllister. Ryan, what a finish that was, and a pressure moment as well. I know he's a World Cup winner, he's been there, done that, he's been in pressure environments before, he's had some really important moments for us, for his country, and so he knows what he's doing in those kind of situations. But to step up in the 99th minute against Manchester United, with European football on the line, how big of a moment is that for Brighton going forward now in the season?
He didn't just step up, he put it right in the top corner. I think that's what was mad, you know, the way he waited. It was an agonisingly long wait. He waited, you know, he composed himself. The silence across the ground when that happened, I mean, it's gone from this crazy moment of everybody going mad because, oh my God, we might have a penalty. So then the referee goes over to VAR. I felt sick. I actually felt sick. I was saying to my dad next to me, I was on his shoulder, like, I can't do this. I actually can't deal with this. And I said, I actually feel ill watching this. I said, I was shaking like this. It was just as bad as Wembley in that final, semi-final. I was like this. I was completely gone. And I said, please, just don't miss this. You know?
Just on that, right? And because I was watching it from home, obviously, and I saw the commentary were like, "Oh, is March taking it? Why is he in the box?" And I was like, "Please, sorry, March," because they're also like, it's redemption, isn't it? For Wembley,
no,
like
thanks.
He's going to step up and take it. And I was like, "Sorry, Solly, but please do not." Because I thought, you know, have you seen in the past where players, what they do, they distract away from the actual penalty taker, they'll take the ball and, you know, use it as like a tactic. I thought McAllister was doing that. I was like, please God, no. And then thankfully that wasn't a tactic. It was just simply him taking the ball to take the penalty. But no, you're right. I think just, you know, that pressure, and I think I was so nervous and just sort of just praying we didn't fuck it up. And then of course, even down the Rashford, I'm sure he wasn't taking the piss, but even down the you know, well, actually, was it fingers in the ears, wasn't it? Not quite Rashford.
I don't know. My phone went flying. I fell over and I went, I nearly fell down the steps as well. The chair in front, because I was going mad. But to be fair, it was one of those moments where it's just what you go to football for. And this is to all those people that left early. My God, what were you doing? What were you doing? I want to actually call people out right now. If you left early, this is why you don't leave early at games. Because what were you thinking? You're in the car on the way back or in the train. What were you doing when you saw that goal come up? What were you actually? You think? Oh my God!
They're probably at
missed
home
another
that
one.
Ryan, to be fair,
yeah, they're probably
made
off
it
home
early.
Well, it wasn't for me. I got stuck in traffic all the way. It took me an hour and a half. May as well go to London. But it was, mate. I can't even. You can't replace those emotions in football. It's what it's all about, and it's very cliche. But you know, when you lose your head like that, and you got, you know, random strangers you're grabbing onto that you're acting like you've known them for the rest of your life, and I think when those moments happened, I think it was personified the feeling of this team as well. You saw Levi Colwill, you saw Alexis McAllister, you saw pretty much the whole squad just going absolutely
Andrew
mad.
Andrew Croft's dancing.
It's you know, it's stuff like that that I think makes this team stronger. And I hope that it's just some sort of, you know, twist in the media narrative where they want to always whirlwind our players all the time. You know, you see Alexis's face there. He ain't putting that on, that's for sure. But I hope that... Yeah. You know, they can start pressing that they actually want to be here for once, rather than just touting them for transfers to big clubs all the time, you know. But
that's a brilliant segue, Ryan, because I appreciate we've got limited time. So just final 2 points then. So penultimate point, McAllister, will he stay or will he go? Of course, he's massively linked with Liverpool. Pretty much his dad's come out and said he's leaving. But then he'd done his press conference, post-match interview with the Sky pundits yesterday. And he was saying about how much he loves the club, how special he makes them feel. And it's just an incredible place to be. So do we reckon McAllister will stay, or is it pretty much nailed on that he is leaving in the summer? Either of you want to take this one?
I think... From an outside point of view, just going off of obviously what you see, like Fabrizio Romano and stuff say, I think he's kind of dead set on leaving, just from what I see. But again, like I just think if I was a Brighton fan, I probably wouldn't be worried, just because of like you almost have this conveyor belt and like, oh well, one player's leaving, let's plant the seed for this other guy to come through, and then he's going to be better than whoever we've just lost anyway.
Yeah.
It's like Bissouma, right? When you lost Bissouma, obviously to Spurs, and he was like, you know, quite a few clubs are obviously linked with him, and then you got Caicedo come out, and he's like 10 times the player. Obviously, Bissouma hasn't had a very good season, hasn't played many minutes, but like Caicedo seems to be like 10 times the player that Bissouma was. So. I mean, just from what's coming out, and I think Fabrizio was saying like, oh, it seems to be something that's going to be very early on as well. And I think I saw a few Liverpool reports yesterday or the day before. I mean, I don't know if that may change depending on obviously where you guys do actually finish in terms of say you do.
I think that's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Say you do obviously get European football in terms of Europa League or Champions League, whatever it may be. I don't know if that then changes his mind. I don't know why you'd kind of make up your mind, especially in the position you're in. I don't know why you'd make up your mind dead set now
Yeah, that's happened. That's happened a lot recently. In the recent times with agents, I think, like, obviously Caicedo was all but set to leave to go to Arsenal when, you know, he put that Instagram post up, which I'm sure wasn't him, but his team around him. And I think that's happened a lot, like you mentioned, especially from Romano. He's tweeted a lot, especially in the lead up to the semi final. I think he tweeted about McAllister and Caicedo about 30 times in the lead up to that game. So yeah, it's this weird sort of thing at the moment with our players, like Ryan touched on. It seems like they want to just unsettle a lot of our players, and I don't know if that's a way to try and derail the final bit of our season. I'm not too sure. Maybe that's just me being, you know, my tinfoil hat on. But quickly, Ryan, did you think Mac will stay or go?
Mate, I honestly think it's a massive toss of a coin. Like, obviously, it's really whirlwinding, isn't it? There's a lot of tweets flying around about so and so wants this and so and so wants that. All that, you know, that ever comes out from Alexis's mouth is that if he stays, he's not going to be an unhappy player. If he goes, it'll have to be for the right money. You know what the club's like. Especially if you've got a player that's quite happy, you know that you're not going to have a big problem on your hands of, you know, like the Trossard situation where he forced a move out. I think the only one that I've ever seen at the club in recent times to force a move was Leandro. So I don't think we'll have that with Alexis. At least I think he's a bit more integral, you know, a bit more integrity to him than that. But yeah, I don't know. It depends if anyone wants to pay sort of the 75 million that people were twat touting. Probably be even more than that, knowing our club, probably 80, 90 million, to be honest. So we'll see. But if people want to spend the money, he'll go. If not, I don't think we'll have an unhappy Alexis.
Yeah, no, agreed. And then final question, Charlie, I'll let you wrap up the show. Two questions, actually. Quickly, will Man United make top four? Because obviously now Liverpool are now, you know, just behind you. And will Brighton make Europe?
I still do think we will get top four, yes. Obviously, I think we're 4 points ahead of Liverpool with a game in hand. Obviously, I'd rather have the points. But I think mathematically it's 9 points from the last games. And we play West Ham. I don't know if this is in order, but West Ham, Wolves, Chelsea, Fulham. I don't know if there's another one in there as well, but you'd like to say that, you know, we should be able to. I think there's only one away game in there as well, so you'd like to say our home form's been pretty good. In terms of with Brighton getting Europe, do you mean any European football or?
Yeah, let's go Europa League and above.
Okay, I reckon so. Yeah, I reckon minimum Europa League, and I feel like Brighton should be ambitious enough to kind of expect that now.
I agree.
I feel like expectations and stuff do change, obviously, as the season goes on. Arsenal fans would never have them in a title race at the start of the season, right? Same as me for United. I never would have said that now. We would have finished. I would have never had United finishing in the top four, in all honesty. Yeah. So, yeah, I think Brighton will get it. I just think Spurs, no. I think the only team that really you have to worry about is that's currently near you is Liverpool. But then you've got two games in hand on them, right?
Yeah.
And you win both of them, you obviously then kind of leapfrog them. So I don't know who those two games in hand are. I don't know if you're
Newcastle
running
City. We've got some tough games.
Okay, so yeah, you've got some difficult games. But no, look, I mean, you've proven that you can go toe to toe with the biggest teams in the Premier League, and you know you've obviously beaten us last night. So no, I don't think feel like Brighton are when you want to come into form, this is the time you want to come into form, right? City have done it towards the end of the season when there's a lot to play for, a lot on the line. This is exactly when you needed to show no fear, and yeah, I mean, fair play to Brighton. And I think if Brighton somehow managed to get in the Europa League and Newcastle somehow managed to get into the Champions League, like how crazy is that? Imagine
it's mad. We're in the Championship together. And Villa as well. It's madness.
Yeah.
Aston Villa as well, doing really well this season.
Mental, so, yeah. Unai Emery, Dracula, he's done well.
But, Villa are a weird team though. Yeah. Villa are a weird team. I'm not convinced as much as I am on United.
We can just leave it there, I think. Just leave it there. Yeah,
they are weird, but I don't know. I think that when you look at setups and stuff, I think we still lead that sort of area at the moment. I think Newcastle have done exceptionally well, don't get me wrong, but still, when you look at them teams around us, you know, even Liverpool this season, you would fancy us on a, you know, we've beaten them 3-0 at the Amex, we beat them in the FA Cup as well, we drew them at Anfield, so, you know, we're unbeaten against them, we did a double over United. I think we, you know, we're better than Newcastle. You know, there's teams around there that I think we are better than. We've just, we've had a bit of hard time as well with obviously the decisions and the VARs. I think we're the worst off in the league. So, you know, if those go for you, then it's a different setup, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, look, thank you so much, Charlie, for joining us. It's been great to have you. Great to have a, yeah, you've been a great insight into Brighton and Man United, of course. So yeah, really, really appreciate your time, mate. It's great. Okay. And finally, we always do a comments down below, Charlie. Now, I don't want to put any pressure on you, mate, but we always put like, comments down below, so to get our audience to put a comment down below. What would you like this week? Anything you want to?
I want, as in like what people to comment?
Yes.
If they've made it this far in the video, basically, then they comment what you say.
Okay, right, let's have a think. I want people to comment down below where... let's do what we ended it on, where they think Brighton will finish this season.
Love it. That's a great cool one. Yeah, so down below, comment down below where Brighton will finish this season. Love that. And of course, please make sure you like, subscribe, all that jazz, all that good stuff. Really appreciate all the support. And of course, keep streaming on Apple and Spotify. And yeah, finally, thank you so much, Charlie. Really appreciate you coming on. And we'll see you for, when is it, Ryan? Next time?
Everton, Monday.
See them soon.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.